For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. Back in July 2019, the life insurance industry imposed a self-regulated moratorium on using genetic test results for underwriting purposes. This followed concerns raised about genetic discrimination and a subsequent parliamentary inquiry. That moratorium comes up for review in 2022. In the absence of any government action following the parliamentary committee recommendations, a group of researchers has come together to form a national research project. Their aim is to make sure the 2022 review gets adequate and independent evidence about the impact and effectiveness of the moratorium. Jane Tiller is the Ethical, Legal and Social Advisor on Public Health Genomics at Monash University. She is also an author of an article on the National Research Project, which is published in the MJA. Jane is my special guest today. Tell us about the current moratorium. When was it set up and what was it designed to do?
Yeah, so a few years ago we started looking at this issue again of genetic discrimination in life insurance, and we were concerned about the number of people who were not having genetic testing, especially at-risk people who were choosing not to have clinical testing, people who were choosing not to be involved in research projects because they were worried about life insurers using their genetic test results to deny them coverage, to increase their premiums. And so it's something that we've been working on for a while.
Was that a well-founded fear? Were insurance companies doing just that before the moratorium?
Yes. Yeah, so legally, insurers could and still can discriminate using genetic test results. A specific section in legislation that allows life insurers to discriminate and to ask for and use genetic test results when they're underwriting and making those decisions.
So which at-risk groups are not getting the genetic tests they should be?
So there are a number of people who have things like hereditary cancer syndromes, for example, where there's a lot of cancer in the family, and that's due to genetic changes which can be found by doing genetic tests. Now, often these people will be referred to a genetic service by a GP, or they'll turn up on their own and it'll be recommended that they have genetic testing to find out whether they do have a genetic predisposition, for example, to a high risk of cancer. If they're found to have one of these genetic predispositions, there are preventative things that can be done, early intervention, early detection and treatment. But sometimes when they're told about the fact that a life insurer might ask for these test results and might discriminate against them, some people will say, I don't want to have the test. I'm not willing to sacrifice that. I'm worried about my future life insurance. I'm worried about life insurance for my family members. And so sometimes they'll decide that's not worth it to me. From a clinical point of view, really concerns us because those people are now walking around with potential genetic risks that they don't know about and they can't mitigate.
The Financial Services Council brought this moratorium in July of 2019. What does the moratorium say about the size of the insurance policy and what they can and can't or should and shouldn't discriminate against?
So the moratorium was brought in, like you say, after a parliamentary inquiry into this issue a few years ago, where it was recommended that there be a moratorium like the one in the UK. Mm. So the UK has a moratorium on genetic test results in life insurance. The FSC brought this in voluntarily, so the government wasn't involved in setting that up or in monitoring or being involved in the moratorium. And the Australian moratorium is a little bit less restrictive than the UK moratorium is. So up to $500,000 of life cover, the Australian insurers won't ask for or use genetic test results when they're underwriting.
Okay.
If you apply for a policy that's worth over $500,000, they still can ask for and use those genetic test results.
But as we said, it's self-regulated, so they can still do it if they really want to do it.
Well, under the legal position is that they can do it, but that law hasn't changed and there's no Australian legal reason why they can't do it. So they have agreed to limit their own use of that, but it is self-regulated. There isn't any government oversight of that. And so if a company does the wrong thing or doesn't use that information correctly, there aren't any legal mechanisms in order to enforce that.
And is that because, I mean, this comes under the Disability Discrimination Act, doesn't it?
That's right. So the Disability Discrimination Act prohibits discrimination across a bunch of different sectors, mm-hmm. but it does carve out a specific exemption for life insurance.
Oh,
lovely. Health insurance is separately protected under legislation. Mm-hmm. Some people worry about health insurance discrimination. A health insurer can't use your genetic test results to discriminate against you,
mm-hmm.
But this specific exception applies for life insurance companies.
Right.
It also applies, interestingly, to travel insurance companies who can discriminate on genetics and aren't subject to the moratorium.
Now, that legislation was drawn up in 92. Is there an argument that says that is, as it is, 28 years in abeyance? Is it about time that was amended?
It's a good question, and it has been updated since 92. So there was a big inquiry in 2003 by the Australian Health Ethics Committee and the Law Reform Commission, which looked at genetic discrimination, and they brought out a big report called Essentially Yours, and they made a number of recommendations about change to the law and policy in this mm-hmm. area. A lot of those changes weren't made, but there were a few amendments made to the Disability Discrimination Act. One of them was to specifically refer to genetic status in that act. However, no changes were made to curtail the use of genetic test results for life insurance underwriting,
mm-hmm.
and there were some recommendations made about changes to policy which weren't done at the time, which is what led us to, I guess, re-agitate a few years ago to say, look, nothing's been done in this area. Life insurers are still using this information. There are concerns that they're using information incorrectly and that they are discriminating even outside of the bounds of what should be done under the law. So this moratorium came in a year and a half ago now, and this was, I guess, something that the life insurance company or the life insurance industry did to respond partially to that recommendation. It is less, like I said, it's less restrictive than the UK moratorium, and it doesn't go as far in protecting consumers as the UK moratorium does. Yeah. There are two ways that it falls short of the UK moratorium. One is the financial limit, $500,000. In the UK, the limit is £500,000, as you would know, is almost $1 million Australian dollars.
Yes, it is.
And so it's about... It's about half of the amount. The other limit is that in the UK, there's actually only one genetic test result that has to be disclosed over that amount.
Okay.
So if you're applying for coverage and you have most genetic test results in the UK, you don't have to disclose them at any level of policy. If you have a result for a condition called Huntington's disease,
mm-hmm.
which is a progressive neurological disorder,
yep.
You do have to disclose over that amount, but that's the only one. And so, as you can see, it's actually a very good consumer solution in
yes.
the UK.
Yes.
In Australia, all genetic test results have to be disclosed. Mm-hmm. Any test you've had over that amount of $500,000.
I'm chatting today with Jane Tiller from Monash University about genetic discrimination and life insurance. Her co-authored perspective on the subject can be found at mja.com.au. Meanwhile, if you're enjoying this podcast, you can catch up with past episodes at mja.com.au/podcasts. You can also subscribe to receive all upcoming episodes through Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Back to our chat. So the moratorium's coming up for review in 22. How do we know that review is going to be done with enough evidence and independent evidence? What safeguards have we got that it's going to be reviewed fairly?
Well, we were very concerned about this, given the moratorium is self-regulated and mm-hmm. the insurance industry is largely self-regulated. And we've seen from some of the inquiries that have happened in the last few years what problems there are with self-regulation, especially with something like this where there's self-interest from the insurance industry. And so we put a grant into the Medical Research Futures Fund, Genomics Health Futures Mission,
yep.
and we're successful in being funded by the government to monitor how effective the moratorium is mm-hmm. in achieving this policy solution of protecting consumers from genetic discrimination. So over the next few years, we will gather evidence and do a number of different research projects across different sectors to find out whether consumers know about the moratorium, whether they are still experiencing genetic discrimination, mm-hmm. how health professionals see what's happening, how the insurance industry is reacting, how it's affecting research, and we will gather together that information and produce a report which will also help to inform that FSC review from an independent standpoint.
Are the FSC involved? Are they cooperating? Are they willing to accept whatever evidence they get given from the project?
So we've involved the FSC as a project partner.
Great.
And then we've supported the grant and we're working with them. They gather some data as well. So mm-hmm. they gather data from their insurers about when genetic test results are used. And we're working with them to obtain access to that data to see, you know, what's happening from the back end. Obviously, mm-hmm. it's difficult to get hold of industry data, but we are working with them as far as we can to get that data. We want to make sure that the review is informed by independent evidence. So we, as a research team, are conducting that research independently of the FSC, but they certainly have input and we meet with them as we go along.
If you could wave a magic wand, Jane, what would you just say, that's it? Insurance companies should not be allowed to do this at all, ever, and it needs to be regulated by the government? Or is there a middle ground, do you think?
If I had a magic wand, then yes, that's what I would do. And that's not a pie-in-the-sky kind of solution. In fact, a number of different countries have got solutions like that. Canada most recently brought in legislation a few years ago, and their legislation is an absolute prohibition on any insurance companies using genetic test results to discriminate. And it is the Canadian Act was challenged all the way to the highest court in Canada, and it was challenged as being unconstitutional, and it failed at that challenge. So the Act remains, and it is a complete consumer protection mechanism. So insurers can't get around it. It's not voluntary whether insurers use it or not. They can't. And that Act actually applies to goods and services across the board. And mm-hmm. so it's a very highly protective consumer act. So it's not just about insurance, but yep. insurers as providers of goods and services fall under that Act. And that means that consumers don't have to worry about whether the moratorium ends in 5 years, whether the amount changes, whether their insurance needs change and they suddenly become stuck. Health professionals don't have to worry about explaining to consumers, oh, there's some protection, but it depends how much insurance you want and here are the limits, and trying to navigate and explain a legal document. But a lot of the feedback that we get from health professionals and others in that space are concerns around, you know, how do I explain this to people? Yeah. And how do I know that this isn't going to cause problems, and how do I know that it's not going to change? And so with a solution like the Canadian solution, it is a legislated document, and legislation can change. Mm-hmm. However, yeah. it's much less likely that legislation yeah. like that is going to suddenly change. And consumers can seek the clinical testing they need, seek the medical help they need, take preventative action, look after their health in a forward-looking way without this fear of financial detriment or insurance consequences hanging over their head.
From reading your article, I got the impression that the Australian government has largely stepped away from this and just let the industry do its self-regulating thing. Is that fair, and is it something you'd like to see change?
That is fair, and I think, you know, there's been a lot obviously going on for the Australian government in the last 2 years and especially the last year. However, there has been no government response to the parliamentary inquiry that made the recommendations a few years ago. And that often happens. You know, there's a lot of inquiries out there and the government doesn't always respond immediately to all of them. Mm-hmm. But we were disappointed to see that the government hadn't made a response to this inquiry. There were quite a lot of issues that came up in terms of life insurance yeah. in general. And there's been, I think, some talk about what will happen, but there's been no response. So we were really disappointed to hear that. We're really pleased, though, to see that the government has funded our research grant. So that's a recognition that this is an important ethical, legal, social issue for Australia and for genomic medicine. And it's great that they've funded it, but we would like to see them step up and make a formal response to the inquiry and also to be putting in process a watching brief, which was also recommended by the inquiry, to actively monitor this situation and to put in place an effective long-term solution in Australia for genetic discrimination.
The prevalence of genetic testing is growing all the time. This can only get more urgent, surely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The changes and the advances in genomic technology are startling, and they are moving very, very rapidly. We're moving into an age where the cost of genetic testing and the number of things that we can see from genetic testing is making it possible for many more people to access genetic data. People are accessing genetic data themselves if they're not being offered it in a clinical setting. And we're at the point now where we've done modelling through Monash University, and there are genetic tests that are cost-effective to be offered across the population for things like cancer predisposition. If we offered testing to every person and then we found all of the people who are at risk who could take preventative measures, it would be cost-effective for the government to do that. And so that's another thing that we are looking at is, should we be offering testing for certain specific well-characterised genetic predispositions just everybody? But one of the issues that we will face in trying to do that is, will people want the testing and will they be afraid of insurance implications? And it's just another barrier.
Yeah.
Whenever we look at these advances, it just gets in the way. People are afraid, and it's difficult to roll out really good genomic medicine without sorting out these issues first. This project is bringing together a lot of researchers from around Australia.
Cool.
So it's a really collaborative effort. It's a national effort of many clinicians, researchers, policymakers around Australia who are interested in this issue, who've been working on this issue for many years, and it's definitely something that we've brought together a really great team, and we're really privileged to have that team.
Can the public get involved, or is this something that Is it you guys gathering evidence rather than people coming forward with evidence, or are you looking for public input?
We're always interested in public input. One of the most difficult things about a research strategy like this is actually accessing stories and getting them published and into peer-reviewed literature.
But yeah.
We hear a lot of anecdotal reports. We hear third parties telling us about things that they've heard, and we really want to be able to gather that evidence. And we have a number of strategies to do that. We gather that through health professionals. We will be sending out a consumer survey. However, if people have stories, if people have been discriminated against in insurance, if people have had genetic testing, we are definitely keen to hear from them, and they can certainly get in touch with us at Monash University, and we would love to speak with them.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Kate, thank you so much for your interest.
No worries.
And for getting this out there. It's really great to be published in the MJA, and it's really nice.
Thanks, Jane.
Thanks, Kate.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.